The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only. In this mini-series, we have partnered with Feel Good, human health and performance experts who transform science into practical, real-life solutions. You will hear from experts in psychology, nutrition, mental health, sleep, movement, and more. This podcast is all about you, whether that be on your lunch break, on your commute, or simply when you need to get moving. Take a moment for yourself and learn on the move.
It's not me, it's my hormones. The female sex hormone, those tiny little messengers moving around our bodies, do so much more than just regulating the menstrual cycle. Receptors for estrogen, for example, are located throughout the body, so those hormones quite literally impact us head to toe. They can determine things like our energy levels, emotional states, stress responses, as well as gut and endocrine health. And it is a two-way street. The way we eat, move, and sleep can also affect our hormonal balance, certain habits tipping it off entirely. In this episode, we take a deep dive into the role of the female hormones and how hormonal balance may tip off or be restored with nutrition, rest, and exercise. We tap into the power of getting to know your own self, your own cycle, and going with the flow, pun not intended. Joining us today is Charlotte Hunter, a registered and qualified nutritional therapist and functional medicine practitioner for 10 years. In her day-to-day life, she's helping men, women, and children eat well and be healthy. Her firm belief is that food can be nutritious but also delicious and can support a number of health conditions and issues. Her main work focuses in helping women navigate the menopause. She knows how food can help balance out our hormones, making our conditions and challenges less impactful and more manageable. Hi, Charlotte, and welcome to the Feel Good Podcast. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Hi, so it's so great to have you here with us today. So to start, can you tell us a little bit more about your expertise and what are the key health challenges women are joining your clinic for?
Okay, so I'm a nutritional therapist and I've been practice for about 12 years and I specialise in women's health. I do have a special interest in perimenopause and menopause, which is a time in a woman's life in particular where the hormones can be incredibly changeable. Most of the clients I see in my clinic have hormone imbalances and symptoms relating to pain, heavy bleeding, irregular cycles, fatigue, headaches. It's quite a long list. However, they also consult me for wider symptoms relating to menopause, as I've said, but things like gut health and immunity and cardiometabolic health, so things like blood sugar and cholesterol. I think the interesting thing for me about hormones is the way they can sometimes mask what is really going on. And I'm hoping as we talk together, we'll see how that is actually quite common. So yes, it's an interesting area.
Then can we start straight with that then? What roles do hormones play in all of this in a woman's life or in the life of a working adult with a monthly cycle?
Yeah, I think in females, our main hormones are estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And I think the focus on women's health tends to be around their influence on our reproductive health. But certainly in my own experience and working with my clients, we know that hormones are not just about reproduction. I know that's their primary role, but they can affect all aspects of our health. And if we think about it, hormones are chemical messengers. They're produced by various special glands around our body, and they travel around from these glands, such as the ovaries, to their target tissues around the body. And I think estrogen is an excellent example. because we find estrogen receptors all over the body, and therefore it's going to have very, very far-reaching effects beyond just reproduction. So we can think about the cardiovascular system, the gut, the brain, the skin, and the bone. So literally head to toe, which is why I think hormones are so important and play such a key role in adults, in women, or people who are menstruating.
Can you expand on that a little bit, on how these hormones change throughout the cycle, and also how they impact then our sleep, our eating, our stress levels, our digestive health?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big question, isn't it? And I think the really interesting thing is that our hormones change constantly throughout our monthly cycles. And I think also we have to step back and remember that although we live in a very modern, fast-paced world, where we're still fairly primitive beings, and our physiology hasn't changed that much over the years. So the prime goal of our sex hormones is to prepare for reproduction, which is what we spoke about just a moment ago. That's sort of the primary goal, but we know that the hormones affect lots of other systems and organs in the body. But I think to get an idea of what's going on, we have to go back to basics and just look at what actually happens in our cycle. So if we think about the typical cycle being around 28 days, obviously some variation on that. On day one of our menstrual cycle, our estrogen and our progesterone levels are quite low. And that sends a signal to our brain, to our pituitary gland, to produce something called follicle stimulating hormone. And if you have blood tests, you might see that as FSH. This begins a process of maturing a follicle on our ovary. And that's a small sac that holds the egg. At ovulation, which is usually mid-cycle, so again, if we're looking at a 28-day cycle, it would be around days 12, 14 maybe, higher estrogen levels that have built up in the first part of the cycle trigger a sharp rise in another hormone called luteinizing hormone, again from the pituitary gland, and this causes the egg to be released from the follicle. Now, the ruptured follicle, which is known as the corpus luteum, that now secretes progesterone and estrogen, which is done to prepare the body for a pregnancy. So it's waiting for a fertilized egg to implant in that tissue. But if the egg isn't fertilized, estrogen, progesterone then start to drop, and then our period starts at the beginning of the next cycle, and it all happens again. So our cycles are broken down into roughly three phases. So we've got the follicular, which is the build-up to ovulation, where the follicles are growing. You have the ovulatory phase, where ovulation is happening. And then the luteal phase, which is that phase just before your next period. So all of these hormones, it all sounds very neat when it's described like that, but they're going to vary from woman to woman. And there's no blueprint for, the perfect cycle in reality. And the hormonal shifts that we see between the estrogen, the progesterone, can be very gradual, or it can be really, really fast and furious. And it's those hormonal shifts that can affect factors such as stress, our eating patterns, our sleep. And like I said, those almost head-to-toe symptoms or changes that we can experience. So it's a very, very beautiful process. It's a very complex process, and we're going to expect to see those changes between different women.
So what are some of the deviations or imbalances that can happen in the hormonal patterns of women or individuals who with the menstrual cycle, or those who don't menstruate because they have hormonal therapies such as contraceptives or for any other reasons?
So I think, when I was younger and growing up, your menstrual cycle is almost something to be feared. Because you think, it can be painful, it's messy, we just have to do this every month. But I think really a regular menstrual cycle is a good sign of a healthy, balanced endocrine or hormone system. It's a good sign of what's going on with our health, what's happening on the inside. And I think physiologically speaking, as I explained before, it's quite a complicated process. And any changes to the cycle outside of pregnancy, menopause, or when using contraception should be investigated, because it could be a sign of an imbalance or a secondary imbalance or something else that's going on under the surface. And as we have these receptors for hormones throughout our body, imbalances can influence all aspects of health and performance. And furthermore, the pattern of hormone production can change from month to month and throughout a woman's life. So it's all about balance, and it's all about knowing what's going on for you and what's unique to you. I think typically the drop in hormones at the end of the cycle can cause things like food cravings, headaches, fatigue, skin outbreaks. And the danger zones, I think, are generally those parts of the cycle which are most active, and we observe significant changes. For example, as I described, ovulation and post-ovulation, there's a lot of stuff going on there. As a specific example, if we think about the second half of the cycle where progesterone is rising, this can sometimes trigger symptoms like constipation and headaches, which can leave you feeling sluggish and heavy. And hormone shifts when menstruation actually starts can sometimes coincide with diarrhea. You know, you may have constipation at the end of your cycle and the new cycle starts. Ugh, you got diarrhea. So I often describe it to my clients as a relay race where the competitors are handing over the baton at each stage. And in the case of our hormones, we're seeing different hormones taking control at different times, which can sometimes trigger those unpleasant symptoms. But of course, let's not forget the symptoms experience will be varied between individuals, which again highlights the importance of knowing our bodies and being familiar with the patterns that happen every month.
That's really so important to have that self-awareness of our bodies and to understand the signs when things are not quite right. Because my question comes then, until now we talked about some health challenges such as stress or, let's say, constipation, acne. But are there any health disorders that women face that they come and see you with that are also impacted by hormonal changes, such as maybe polycystic ovaries? And with these health disorders, is our lifestyle making an impact in the likelihood of developing such disorders?
I think it's always difficult to say, you know, what contributes to their development. I think something like polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS, is a brilliant example, especially as estimated about 1 in 10 women experience this condition. It's an interesting hormone condition because, you know, there's huge amounts of research on it as well. And we've started to realize that ladies with this particular condition are biochemically unique. You know, their guts work differently. You know, a lot of the systems in the body work differently. In relation to the research, we are seeing that a healthy diet with regular exercise is having a really positive effect on PCOS sufferers. So they're finding that their weight management is much, much better. They have improved levels of glucose, insulin, their cholesterol and their cardiovascular markers are much better. Their periods are more regular. And they also have a much more balanced profile when it comes to androgens, which are the male hormones like testosterone or DHEA. And they find that the symptoms associated with those androgens, such as acne or male pattern baldness or excess hair, you know, can also improve. And it's mainly diets around lowering the GI value of foods, managing and balancing carbohydrates, and really a really good Mediterranean style diet. There is a lot to be said for managing these conditions via diet and lifestyle. You know, it's not just diet. You know, I think there are a lot of lifestyle factors that come to play as well. But it really is a team effort. And often that's alongside conventional medical treatment, support and management as well. But, you know, polycystic ovaries is one example. You know, we could look at endometriosis, adenomyosis, and other, you know, reproductive or female type conditions.
Can we go a little bit more into details on the role nutrition play when it comes to optimal health and to optimal hormonal function?
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to hormones, it's really easy just to think about the big players. So we have estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and they're our main female hormones and they control our menstrual cycles, as we discussed earlier. But I think when it comes to hormones and thinking about how hormones affect our body and our well-being, we've always got to think about the bigger picture. So we need to consider factors such as sleep, stress, blood sugar control, inflammation. Because when it comes to hormones, everything affects everything. And that's a two-way street as well. You know, we think about blood sugar affecting our hormones, but hormones can affect blood sugar. Sleep can make your hormones worse, but hormones can also make your sleep worse. So we've got this situation where everything's connected. And we can take that a step further as well. You know, what about our digestion? Are we able to digest, absorb? And more importantly, are we able to put the trash out every day? And these are all important processes for hormone balance. If we think about it logically, if you're not taking in the right nutrients via your food, you're less able to support your hormones. You know, you're running on less than optimal fuel. And you know, you can think about your car. You know, you refuel, you check the oil, you make sure there's always plenty of screen wash. You get an annual MOT, regular servicing. You always make sure your tyres are safe and well-maintained. And I think we need to think about self-care for good hormone balance as well. You know, what you eat and drink, but also those lifestyle and maintenance factors such as relaxation, stress management, sleep will all play a really important part. And thinking about blood sugar again, because I think I've mentioned that a few times as we've been discussing this. Well, we know imbalances can lead to energy crashes and that all too familiar roller coaster effect where your glucose and insulin are peaking and troughing repeatedly throughout the day. We may experience symptoms such as fatigue, headaches, just feeling a bit fuzzy, you know, cravings for certain foods, mood swings, concentration issues, and so on. So thinking about how our hormones are constantly talking to each other and all of those receptors and all of those systems around our body means that we have to take a very holistic approach to supporting hormone health. And, you know, I always say to my clients, you know, we have to look at the bigger picture rather than simply focusing on the pixels. You know, it's almost like we're less interested about the progesterone, so estrogen, progesterone and testosterone, and more interested in what our body is doing with the hormones and how we can support that through really simple interventions. You can break down your cycle so into smaller chunks to make sense of it. You know, once you roughly know the different zones in your cycle and what's happening, it's much easier to try and work out how you can work well in your day-to-day life. And I think if we think about the first week in your cycle, you know, we want to be starting off quite slowly, because this is when, you know, we're starting our menstruation. But at the same time, our estrogen is rising. You know, just very gradually things are increasing. So as the days go along, you can start socializing more, perhaps. You know, that estrogen makes you feel much more comfortable and confident. You know, we often talk about estrogen being your diva hormone. Think about your energy. You might notice that it's starting to gradually increase day by day. If you're thinking about exercising, keep them short, keep them focused. You know, maybe go for exercise sessions at less than an hour and try and incorporate some strength work. But it's really just about starting slowly and gradually winding things up, because we know that that estrogen is slowly starting to creep up. Now, when you get to week two, your energy is likely to be improved. You might have more endurance. Again, perfect time to be socializing and maybe increasing the intensity of some of your exercise. You know, it's a great opportunity to, you know, embrace those dynamic feelings. Think about new movements, new techniques, try a new class. You know, there's lots of things you can do to take advantage of the high energy that we tend to have in that week two. As we move to week three, the energy might start to lower. This is maybe the time to, you know, go back to those familiar things that you used to. You know, you might find that your energy and endurance starts dipping somewhat, and you might want to have those cheeky little naps in the afternoon. But I think it's the time when you have to start listening to your body, and you might find that endurance-based activities or something just very steady state, you know, you don't have to think too hard, it's very familiar, you know what you're doing. And that might also help some of those symptoms that are starting to creep in. In the final week, week four, this is when you've really got to start bring in the self-care, I think. You might be more prone to moodiness, a few aches and pains, a bit grumpy and impatient or a bit of a short fuse. And your energy might not be as plentiful as you've experienced earlier in the month. So be cautious of doing too much. Maybe start saying no, don't say yes to everything. And keep technical demands low. You know, if your cognition feels a bit rusty, you know, and you feel very tired, it's perhaps not the time to do anything too technical or too overloading on your system. And think about good food as you move through towards the end of your cycle. You know, this is the week where you might be feeling sluggish. I think I mentioned, you know, it's that progesterone dips, or sorry, it's higher and gradually coming down. It can cause digestive upsets. But whichever week you're in, whichever part of your cycle in, you've got to start really listening to what's happening with your body. And I think in our current society, that's perhaps something that we're not very good at. I know I haven't been always that good at doing that either, but it's about listening to your body and learning how to track your own cycle so that you can adapt your schedule, I think.
How does this apply to someone who's reached a menopause bridge?
Menopause is interesting because I think menopause is actually the easy bit in some respects. I think perimenopause is a time where it's very, very changeable. The hormone shifts can, you know, be really quite different day to day, week to week, month to month. And it's a case of expect the unexpected, I think. But again, you can apply that same logic. You know, listen to your body. You know, what is your body telling you? So I think it's always a really good idea to keep a diary to track your symptoms, you know, wherever you are on that spectrum, whether you're, you know, in your 20s or you're in your 60s, you know, you can still track your cycles. I think when you finally go through menopause, which is technically 12 months from your last period, your hormones do become a bit more predictable because you will either be on HRT, which can also bring challenges of highs and lows, or you find that you're managing your menopause without any HRT. But it's very, very different for everyone, which is why this is such a massive topic, and it's quite difficult to really go into specifics, I think.
It is, and I have so many questions here, but I guess we're trying to keep it quite succinct. We only have so much time. So I have another question before I move into the next bit. Mm. How does this apply to also to women who don't have a regular monthly cycle or who don't have a cycle at all because maybe they are on contraceptives or for other reasons?
Again, I think it's very much down to the individual. I think certain contraception products like, for example, the Mirena coil or a hormonal coil, you know, there are different ones out there. I think you can still pick up those signs. You may not menstruate, but you can still, if you really, really think about it and track the changes to your body, you can still often work out roughly when you might have ovulated. So I think you can still kind of find your way. I think when someone is on the contraceptive pill, it's very different, I think, because, you know, it's almost like an artificial cycle. You know, contraceptives contain small amounts of synthetic estrogen and progesterone, which inhibits our body's natural hormone response. And there's lots of different types. They exert different effects on the body, depending on how they're taken, when they're taken, why they're taking. You know, it can change things, but ultimately, as I said, it's creating an artificially regular cycle. And I think the difficulty for me in my role as a nutritionist is that they often mask what could be really going on, and then also we get the horrible side effects such as, you know, skin issues or bloating or issues with your libido. So again, it's always back to keeping a diary. You know, just notice what you notice about your own particular cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So self-awareness, it's easier said than done, though. I guess.
So, absolutely.
moving a little bit forward from hormones to blood sugar, because I know you mentioned it a few times. So what are the most prominent causes of imbalances in blood sugar and insulin levels, and how do this manifest in our day-to-day lives?
I think this is quite a broad question. We all have a different glucose and insulin response. But I think in very simple terms, there are a couple of things that can imbalance our blood sugar. I think the first one is grazing. This is a big problem. I see it in a lot of my clients. And I think it's a really difficult concept to get your head around, because for so many years, you know, we've been told to eat little and often, you know, eat when you're hungry, eat like a bird. And this has often been on the recommendation that it's going to keep your blood sugar level stable. Now, logically, this makes sense because you want to keep your blood sugar within a normal, healthy range. And every time we eat, our glucose increases and our bodies produce a hormone called insulin. Now, insulin is very much like using a key to unlock a door. Insulin allows the glucose to be used for energy or for it to be stored. But if this process becomes overwhelmed, we start storing that energy as fat. Obviously, it's a lot more complicated than this, but it's really just to give you an idea of how we use insulin to control our glucose. Now, if you're constantly grazing, you're putting these mechanisms under pressure time and time again. It's also going to put pressure on your digestion. And your blood sugar regulation never really gets the chance to reset and recover because you're constantly, you know, eating something. And furthermore, insulin, as well as being an energy storage hormone, it's one of the most inflammatory substances in our body as well. It's also going to encourage the accumulation of belly fat, you know, abdominal weight gain, which has been associated with a lot of cardiovascular risk factors.
Is it particular belly fat, or is it fat overall the body?
I think it will have an effect systemically, i.e. in the whole body, but I think there is that quite clear connection between grazing, imbalanced blood sugar, and getting that weight gain around your tummy, which is why we often see that weight gain in ladies who have poor blood sugar balance, or they have hormone issues. Polycystic ovaries, again, as an example, we often see that. Again, there will be variations. It may not appear, you know, externally on some people, but we really want to make sure that insulin and glucose are well controlled. And I think other factors that will imbalance our blood sugar, which I suppose connects to what I've just said about the grazing, is, you know, diets high in sugary soft drinks. They're one of the worst things for spiking your blood sugar. A high intake of refined carbohydrates, too many carbohydrates, too many simple sugars, you know, not enough fiber, not enough protein or fats. So, you know, it's like having a fire and just pouring petrol on the fire. You know, that's the quick, fast releasing sugars. Instead, we want to put lots of coal and logs and slow burning fuels so that, you know, it doesn't spike our blood sugar in the same way. But I think that it's probably dietary factors and also the grazing that are the two really, really important factors to consider in relation to blood sugar control.
I like the simplicity of that. So make sure that you have 3 meals per day that have a balanced formula. So enough protein, fiber, and healthy oils, which I think are often forgotten. So now, before we finalize, let's do a quick myth-busting exercise. We know that due to excessive marketing these days, it is often hard to know what health advice is true or is a myth. So what are the top 3 myths you have seen around women's health?
I think the first one is the length of your cycle. We grow up being told our menstrual cycles are 28 days, but it's not unusual to have them anything from 24 or 35 or even more or less. The best way to monitor this is keep a diary. I think there are about 101 apps out there you can use, but know your pattern and know when you're out of sync. And also remember, it's really common for your patterns to change in response to things like weight changes, weight gain or weight loss, lack of sleep, stress, medications, travel, supplements. You know, every cycle is unique and every woman is unique. You know, we shouldn't just think of a cycle being 28 days and that's it. It's always 28 days. Another myth is that hormone treatments, i.e. the contraceptive pill, is the only way to regulate hormone imbalances. You know, it can be, but I think one of the best ways, easiest and quickest way, is probably diet, exercise, and lifestyle. You know, small changes like managing your stress or drinking plenty of water or thinking about that formula I just spoke about can be a great start. The third one is accepting that hormone imbalances are normal. We shouldn't have to accept this. You know, we go through our teens, our 20s thinking, well, I've always had painful periods, or now my periods are always heavy, or oh, my periods are never regular, but that's normal for me. You know, changes of our cycles can be indicative of other problems. So I think it's always worth speaking to your doctor or medical practitioner, or, you know, someone like me, a nutritionist, or, you know, whoever your medical provider is, you know, but have a conversation about it.
What about women's supplements? Are those true or a myth?
It's a difficult one. I think any supplement that has female, women's, menopause, perimenopause, anything that alludes to female health, I always think are more expensive. So, you know, think carefully. Do you need a women's multivitamin or do you just need a regular multivitamin? Because chances are the ingredients are going to be quite similar. I also think if you're looking at complexes, so, you know, things that claim to balance female health or female hormones, how do you know that it's the right combination of ingredients to balance your hormones? You know, you could have a very, very different hormone profile to me, and we wouldn't go out and buy the same female supplement, you know. So I think you've got to be quite careful. If you're unsure, I think do your research, speak to a professional, get some advice. And I think for some people, it can be incredibly helpful.
Thank you very much, Charlotte, for all the great input today. We discussed what are some of the most common health challenges women are facing. We looked at how we can understand our hormones and cycles better, and how we can slightly adapt our lifestyle to be more in sync with our natural rhythms, but also looked at the impact of blood sugar and most common health myths around women's health. I would now like to challenge you who are listening to think about one thing, one idea you learned today that you would like to take away and make a change. So what change will you make to improve your health? What will you do differently in the next 24 hours? We know that often time when we learn something new, if we don't make a change in the next 24 hours, we may as well lose the momentum and forget about it. So what will you do in the next day? But also think about what habit would you like to change in the next months? What would be your wild card? What I took away, and I know I'll change straight away, is reduce grazing. I think I can easily have a slightly bigger breakfast so that I won't snack before lunch. I hope you all enjoyed the podcast. I hope you all took one practical takeaway, and I wish you all a wonderful day or evening. Thank you very much.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk.